Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
You have probably heard the term rare genetic diseases. Well, here's a shocker. 30 million Americans are living with one. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. To be considered a rare genetic disease, it has to be a condition fewer than 1 in 20,000 Americans are known to suffer from. But there are a lot of these diseases, and many of them are just becoming known to science. In many cases, doctors can't figure out what's causing the symptoms at first, or how to treat them, because they've never seen it before. And that can lead to life or death situations for some patients. Today on the podcast, we meet a Chicago-area family that's battling a rare disease, and a doctor who's providing care. 7-year-old Charlie Sims was diagnosed with CLN1 disease, a disorder that impacts the nervous system. Now, it's believed to affect only one in every 100,000 people worldwide. We'll learn more about that in just a moment. Now, I had the chance to sit down with Charlie's physician, Rush pediatric neurologist Dr. Elizabeth Barry Kravis, and his parents, Matthew and Lee Sims, to hear more about what diagnosis, life, and treatment have looked like. First, let's hear about Charlie.
He is a bright, shining light. Charlie's always been an extraordinary boy. At the age of 3, he was MVP on a 5-year-old T-ball team, dominating in athletics, also excelling at sight words and coloring and all the things 3-year-olds do. And we were just so excited to watch him grow up until we saw a shift around the age of 4. When Charlie started to have regression in certain developmental skills, as well as just typical daily activities. And over a few years' time, that regression became more and more obvious, as well as more and more concerning. But Charlie, to this day, is a very happy, fun, loving boy. He loves to laugh, to dance, to play sports. Football and basketball are his favorite. And he truly does give the best hugs and makes everyone who knows him smile very big.
I bet.
Yeah.
What's your favorite part of your boy's personality, Matt?
I think my favorite part is that him and I are kindred spirits in a way that we love to do things together. Dad loves Ghostbusters. Charlie loves Ghostbusters.
Yes, I would say 80s movies is one of their very unique bonds.
Oh, what a kid. I want to meet him. I got to meet him. But you mentioned something there, Lee. You said that you started noticing behavioral changes from Charlie. This happened at around the age of 4. Tell us more about what you saw and what you thought was happening at the time.
Yes. So ironically, when he turned 4, it was 2020. And we all experienced the joy of the pandemic, which I think brought a lot of concerns to many parents and their children missing out on typical resources or typical peer groups, school, things along those lines. So what we started seeing, we thought was likely just a pandemic setback with forgetting how to write his name, forgetting certain vocabulary, not being able to make the hand-eye coordination that he typically could make. He maintained in that area for a little bit, but as I mentioned, as the years went on, it became more and more obvious, particularly with his memory and remembering things that had happened just in the last couple hours of the day. And that, I think, was to me the biggest alarm going off for me.
Oh, yeah. Let's bring the doctor in. Dr. Barry Kravis, I mentioned that Charlie was eventually diagnosed with the rare CLN1 disease. Can you do your best to explain to us what that is?
Okay, so CLN1 disease is a form of something called Batten's disease, which we now know consists of at least 13 and probably more different diseases. It's caused by a mutation in an individual gene called CLN1. The patient inherits a mutation from both their parents, one on the mother's chromosome and one on the father's chromosome.
Okay.
And then they can't make an enzyme, which is an important protein that chews up kind of waste material in the cell. And that enzyme is located in the lysosome, which is kind of the garbage can of the cell. And so when that PPT1 is not there, that's the enzyme that's deficient in CLN1, then stuff builds up in the lysosomes, and it's particularly harmful to the brain to have all of this stuff building up in the lysosome, and then it activates a whole bunch of other processes.
So when Lee talks about him losing his memory, for instance, is that a result of what you just described?
Right, because the stuff building up in the brain cells is causing death of brain cells. So kind of like Alzheimer's disease, you're losing brain cells, and then you can't function the way you normally would.
I'm curious how medical professionals define a disease as rare. In the first place,
the official definition is like 1 in 200,000 people across the country have the disease, and that translates to a disease that's maybe about 1 in 2,000 or 1 in 4,000 people. CLN1 is not just rare; it's in the ultra rare category, which means that there are very few people who have the disease. CLN1 itself probably occurs in like less than 1 in 200,000 people. And some patients present as babies, but Charlie got the disease when he was older, and that older onset form is even more rare. So this is an extremely rare disease.
Did that present more challenges, though, the fact that Charlie was diagnosed at a little bit later of an age than what's typical?
I think what happened is Charlie's disease was gradually evolving, and kind of no one knows what it is, and you go to doctors and they kind of think, oh, maybe it's just ADHD, oh, maybe it's just this, maybe he's just a little developmentally delayed, and they don't pick up, you know, what it might be, because early on the signs of it are very insidious and they kind of creep up.
So, Dad, I'll turn to you. What was going through your mind when you got the diagnosis? Because on one hand, you're waiting for some kind of answer as to what was actually happening, but had you ever even heard of CLN1 disease?
No. We had been, you know, doing our own research, trying to figure out whatever we could, but we're operating in the blind here. We're lay people. We're not medical professionals. And we were so anxious to finally get a diagnosis. We thought if only we knew what the problem was, we could get started on a solution. We were solution driven. We were trying to figure out what was wrong so we could get things right. And when we got the diagnosis, it was gut-wrenching. It was like having a semi-truck drive through your soul. Because when we heard CLN1 and looked up what it is and found out this is a disease that up to this point there's been no treatment for, that it's progressive, that it's going to rob everything from a child who has it, and that every single case of it ever has been fatal, that was the worst news in the world.
Lee?
I also had not heard of CLN1. I had a little bit of a memory of learning what Batten's disease was back in nursing school. I was a nurse for a little while. So I Googled it as well while we were on the call with the diagnosis. And in my mind, I think I was more in a fight or flight mentality of, well, what the internet says isn't going to be our situation. We're going to figure this out. There's no way that we can just accept that there is no option for him. And we did a lot of time rapidly educating ourselves on the disease and taking action while still in shock with that diagnosis. But yes, to your point, we'd been waiting so long to determine what exactly are we dealing with. What is the correct diagnosis? And that was the last thing we expected to hear.
So, Doctor, what Matthew and Lee went through isn't uncommon for parents and families of kids who've got rare diseases. When we talk about it being hard to even get a diagnosis, I mean, how difficult are we talking about here?
For rare diseases, diagnosis is difficult based on clinical symptoms. The patient comes in, there are lots of different diseases they could have that might present the same. In recent years, we have better genetic technologies to diagnose those diseases, such as, you know, what Charlie had, which is exome sequencing, where they sequence all the genes in your body and they find out which one, you know, has a mutation. So we also have panels for different kinds of neurologic presentation that are allowing us a lot more diagnoses than we used to get. But someone has to decide this is a set of symptoms that's worth sending that panel. And insurance has to decide they're going to pay for it, which is, you know, another hurdle, because often we'll get denials and we'll have to go back and kind of explain to insurance why we need this test done. And sometimes things stall at that stage. Right. So it's a little bit difficult even when you know you want to get the test. But the first step is that a doctor has to say, this is weird and I don't know what it is. And so I'm going to send genetic testing.
I see. And I know the Sims family, I mean, this is over the course of years, right? I mean, you started out with other physicians sort of working towards this process here with Dr. Barry Kravis. You normally come in, doctor, a little later in the process for patients living with rare diseases, right? Can you explain with your particular expertise?
Yeah, I often do. I often come in after somebody else, like the Sims had a different doctor, Dr. Marcaccioli, who sent the exome sequencing because another neurologist has said, oh, I'm going to send exome sequencing. And then they get a mutation in some rare disease gene. And then they say, oh, we're going to send you to Dr. Barry Kravis and see if she has anything for you. And okay. Sometimes there is something and sometimes there's not. So I think an important point is that we're just accelerating so fast in terms of the kinds of treatments that we have for genetic diseases that we're just on the cusp of, you know, having stuff for people. But then you have to figure out how to get at it.
So how was Charlie during this part of the process?
So I saw Charlie after he was diagnosed by Dr. Marcaccioli with CLN1. And the parents were referred to me to find out if there was anything I knew about that could treat him. As this particular disease goes, he has some symptoms of it, but he's not really, really far along in the disease. Because as the Sim said, the disease gradually robs you of everything. You stop being able to talk, to eat, to walk, to do anything with your hands, and you become ultimately where you just kind of lay in bed and eventually die of something like a pneumonia. So he wasn't nearly toward the end. He's still at the beginning of the disease. And with that, I knew there were some possible options because I knew people in the field and I knew that there was a gene therapy that was being worked on for this disease.
Since starting treatment, Matt and Lee, I mean, how's everything going for you all?
I think things are going well, and it's largely based on what we're hearing from Dr. Barry Kravis. So Charlie's deficient enzyme in his blood went from well below normal limits to exponentially increasing. He now has PPT1 levels in his blood that any other normal child has. And
that's great.
We recently learned that his cerebral spinal fluid, which is, of course, the fluid that encapsulates his central nervous system, his brain, and his spinal cord, the parts of his body that are primarily affected by this disease process, are also now showing very positive signs with respect to the treatment. And I think that what we're seeing in Charlie is we're seeing a lot of where he was a few months ago, and we're hopeful that we're seeing signs that the disease progression is either slowing or stalling out. I think that we're very early, though. We're only a few months removed from it, so we're cautiously optimistic.
What have you learned throughout this process, Lee? I'm curious what you learned, especially about advocating for yourselves and for your son.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of my favorite words, advocating.
I imagine you've had to do a lot of it.
Yes, and I have a community of moms that, you know, we support each other. And I think that all parents try to be the biggest advocate for their child. But what I learned through this process was we have a significant shortage, I think, in some of these specialties that leading up to this point, we were checking off the boxes of a developmental pediatrician, a sleep specialist, a geneticist, different areas that we needed to get consultation from to then rule out all the more common diseases to then get to where we are now in this ultra rare disease identification. Some of the wait lists that I had called large organizations in Illinois were 3 years.
Wow.
And for Charlie, at the rate that Matt and I were seeing him regress and certain skills deteriorate, we did not have 3 months or 3 years.
Right.
So
that's frightening.
It's terrifying. I thankfully was in a position to be on the phone a lot where I could make these calls, be put on hold, take 4 to 5 hours a day to call different institutions to try to get on these wait lists. And by significant luck, Dr. Barry Kravis had a cancellation, I think a double cancellation the day we got into her. But I did also call persistently and say, I can't wait 3 months for my child to be seen. I probably said some other things, but I think that I also had being a nurse, I know you have to sometimes get the message to the physician for them to understand the prioritization.
You've got to be persistent. That is for sure.
Of a certain condition or situation, especially as a new patient.
Yeah.
So it just is a message to any listeners out there who are trying to advocate for themselves or a family member or a child, is don't give up. Be persistent. Sometimes being the squeaky wheel is not a bad thing. And really trust your gut in advocating for those who need it.
Great advice. So, doctor, it's hard to get a diagnosis, just as challenging to find the right treatment. How do you address or even fix this?
Wow, that's a big question. I think part of the problem is that there aren't enough specialists in our area who are trained. And even if we work, you know, and see patients 24 hours a day, we almost can't fill the need. And so, you know, when the Sims talk about they were lucky that someone else canceled, we had moved them up to the number one patient on the waiting list to move them in. And so we got them in, and it was really fortunate because we got them in right the day before I had a call with the company that has the gene therapy that they were able to get. So there was a bunch of moons
talk
that lined up
timing.
For this. Yeah, it was incredible. And fortunately, the company was agreeable to work with us on that. But increasingly, we're going to have patients with these ultra-rare diagnoses, and there are only going to be so many experts who know how to do the kinds of things that you need to do to bring a genetic treatment that targets their problem to them, because these treatments aren't easy to get. They involve working with the FDA and, you know, knowing how to do, you know, how to design a trial of the treatment. So I think we're kind of faced with a crisis. I think we need to train more people. That's really the key, is that we need to bring in young people who want to learn how can I treat rare disease patients and expedite that and get it done quickly. And I need to learn all of these steps. And doctors don't learn that in their standard residency training. They need to come and train at a center that does it.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. Well, we're near the end of our conversation here, but I'm wondering what keeps you hopeful about the future. I'm looking at you, Matthew. I'm looking at you, Lee. And what's next for Charlie and your family?
I think what keeps me hopeful is that Charlie's proof that families with rare genetic diseases can have hope, that I think that there's realistic scientific opportunities to develop genetic-based therapies for children who need it, but that we're in a race against time. And I think that the system needs to be improved. We need better funding for development of genetic-based therapies. We need better understanding and public awareness, not just for patients and patient advocates, but for frontline physicians, pediatricians, genetic counselors, school professionals. And I think that we need to find a way to improve the regulatory processes with the FDA. It worked for Charlie, but it doesn't work for so many other people.
Yeah, we'll have to leave it there. Matthew and Lee Sims, they've been working with Dr. Elizabeth Barry Kravis for their 7-year-old son's therapy on CLN1 disease. Dr. Barry Kravis is a pediatric neurologist at Rush University Medical Center. Thank you all so much. What a great conversation.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Micah Yasin, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. And this conversation came from a listener suggestion. If there's a health topic that you would like us to cover here on Reset, email us at reset@wbez.org or leave us a voicemail at 888-915-9945. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Let's talk again soon.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.